Welcome to Victory Points. I am Becca Scott, and this is a podcast about board games. You may have seen me on the internet, but mostly as host of Geek and Sundry's Game the Game, where we play through new board games each week. But that's not important now. What's important now is my guest, Mr. James Katica. James, he's a funny man, comedian. He does improv. He's a role player in the D's of D. He's originally from the Seattle area, and since moving to LA, has become one of my favorite people to game with. Aww, I told him he couldn't talk in this part. James has a background in social media marketing and is the game curator for LA's newest, hottest board gaming bar, The Dragon and Meeple. You can also check him out on our full playthrough of all 13 chapters of Betrayal Legacy on Geek and Sundry's YouTube channel. Hello, James.
Hello!
Did you like your intro?
I loved it. Who doesn't love to hear somebody just list on and on the things that you do? And it's very sweet. I'm not comfortable with all of that, but thank you.
What about, it's all factual.
You're right. There's a difference, though, between the facts and what we see as truth, I think, though. And it's like, yeah, I did those stuff, but you don't have to tell me I did that stuff. And
The interpretation of facts versus truth has so much to do with today's topic, which I shall let you know about now. Today we're going to discuss competitiveness in friendly play. So, it's totally natural to bring your war face to, say, a tournament setting. Mm-hmm. But where is the line with competitiveness in a friendly home game? And that's what we're going to dive into. We're going to talk about the boundaries, and you can tell me the times when I've been too much.
Gotcha.
And vice versa, even though you never are. You're a very friendly game player.
Right.
So yeah. I brought you here to give me advice on how to keep my competitiveness in check.
Yeah. All right. So why don't we go ahead and open up the lines, and we can just have some callers just ring in, and let's start giving Becca some advice on how she can better approach gaming in a way that is, no, I'm just kidding.
Hi, James.
Hi. Oh, yes.
My name is Worcester.
Yes, Worcester. Worcester from Culver City.
That's me. Hi. I was wondering, does Becca start to sweat and turn red when she really wants to win?
No, Worcester. Everything happens below the belt, actually. So
what?
She becomes a little bit flatulent, and she'll. No, this is what. Oh, one
Go
thing.
Go further, please.
Worcester, please. Okay, click. All right, Worcester was getting a little too comfortable. I do have to say that. So being on Game the Game, I wasn't sure because every time I'm on the In the Game, I'm sitting right next to you.
I put you there.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sitting right next to you, and I'm always like, it's her show, you know, like, don't take up too much, you know what I mean? Like just be in my space. But every once in a while, like, you'll elbow me, and I don't know if it's just you, you know what I mean? Like, you gesturing to the board, or it's just like, oh, am I doing too good? So that's how, and that's the perfect example, because competitive me would be like, you know, yeah, all right, let's do this. But like non-competitive me is just like, oh, what if I internalize that? And I'm just like, oh, am I hogging too much camera? Do I need to, you know what I mean?
James, don't be afraid to take up space, okay? As a tall, strong male, you've been marginalized, you know? So don't let people put you in that box where you need to be less than.
Yeah, I guess as far as boxes go, tall, strong male is an okay box to be marginalized in.
With great hair. James always has perfect hair, and it never changes.
I don't know if it's great hair. It's the hair that I have that has not changed apparently for decades because my college friends will not let me, like, they're just, every time we hang out with Jake and Katie, it's just like, you just look just the same. You look exactly the same.
Well, thank goodness for your college friends, because that is why we get to game together. But let's dive into your feeling of Is this a thing that you feel in games all the time, or specifically because you're in a filmed setting of playing a game and worried of overstepping bounds, which some people have done, but you have never done?
Yeah, some people do. Oh gosh, no, I think that it is the filmed setting does lend itself to a more formal, you know what I mean, kind of play. I want, ultimately, game the game. It's about the game. We want people to see how it's played, show the rules. And that's why I enjoy being a guest with, again, and I've told you this, like, you as a host are so good at not only being entertaining and funny, but also you're very good about, like, keeping track of the rules and, like, oh, we can't do this, or oh, we need to do this, or asking a really good question that comes up. Keeping the ball bouncing in that way, I'm like that's a lot to juggle. And so I'm just goofball improviser James, who also loves to play games. God, I should get a shirt. So, but ultimately we are there in service of showing off this wonderful new game.
To think of it that way takes the pressure off of you, you know?
Absolutely.
And now, because it's edited, when I make mistakes, it's cut out.
Yeah,
that's the beauty of it.
Isn't it great?
Yeah.
You can be flawless.
Well, that is such a nice compliment. Thank you. Yeah. But for me, I did have to reorient myself to the way that I play games, because by nature, I am a play or die, win or die kind of person.
Yeah.
And I had to, through the process of the show, tone that down because it gets mean. You know, and you are someone that I wanted to talk about this topic with you, because I think you are able to compartmentalize very well gameplay and keeping the fun in it.
Yeah.
All right. We're jumping ahead because there's something I like to do at the beginning of a show with a guest, which is ask them about them, about what kind of games they like. And most importantly, my number one question I always ask is, what did you play as a kid?
Okay, so as a kid, we grew up with me and my mom and my dad. I'm an only child. So we had a stack of board games in the living room, and they were like the boxes. They were all from the 70s. So it was
the Milton Bradleys?
Yeah. There was Risk. A dusty old box of Yahtzee, which they still have. We played it in January. A few months ago, we played it, that old box of Yahtzee. We had Monopoly, and I think that might be it. I think that might be it. They had like a deck of that old card game Pit.
But Pit? I don't know it. Tell me more.
Pit was a stock trading game. It was meant to be played with like a large group, and you all are trying to like corner the market on corn or
commodities.
Yeah, certain commodities. Yeah, yeah. And so you're trading really quickly, and if somebody plays like a bear or a bull, it has certain effects on the game, and you're just trying to stack up
some. A bear or a bull?
Yeah, those are stock terms. Like a bear market is like one that's really like it's like going down very quickly, and bull is like it's charging up or something.
I could be completely wrong.
Everything here. I know about the stock market, I learned from Trading Places.
Oh.
The Eddie Murphy film from the 90s.
I thought you were going to say, what was that, Adam McKay, the Big Short.
Yeah, The Big Short is a great film.
Yeah.
It taught me a lot about the 2008 housing crisis.
Yeah, nothing about stocks.
The financial collapse.
Trading Places. Yeah, that's the...
Which, shout out to Adam McKay, Vice was one of the most underrated films of 2018, in my opinion. It was a great film.
Really?
Yeah. Educational.
Educational.
May I just say, fuck Dick Cheney. Yeah. I didn't know. I was kind of young during that era.
Yeah.
But normally we get to the politics later in
I'm
the podcast.
So sorry.
I went there. I no did trying. That. I'm you very tangential.
It. You brought it in. You brought it into this wonderful... We were talking about my home, and you brought it into my childhood.
The Pit.
So, the Pit.
Bears and Bulls.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
But we never played that. In fact...
Wait, what? Why'd you bring it up?
So, it was an old, dusty... I'm saying... we had all these box board games from the 70s, and we just, like, never played. My family was we grew up in, like, a very kind of, like, rural area, and there's always, like, chores to do, so, like...
And you grew up in Seattle, yeah?
It's a town outside of it. It's called Bothell. It's like
Bothell
is like a good like 20-minute drive outside of there. So I grew up like across the street from like a cow pasture. And we had 2.5 acres and we had a creek in the backyard.
But did you have any cows?
No, we didn't have any cows.
You just saw the cows.
Yeah, yeah. They were across the pasture.
You smelled them.
In the summertime, when your windows are open, sometimes you would get a waft of cow.
And you were a creek boy.
And I was, okay, I didn't identify as that, but I definitely spent a lot of time, you know, like playing in the creek or the trail down to the creek when it would snow. You go sledding and stuff like that. We had a large vegetable garden, stuff like that. All of this to say that there was always something to be do and engaged in.
How idyllic.
We didn't play a lot of board games, though, but they were there. So at some point, my parents were playing board games. I would have to really wrangle them to play a game. So I was going to share like one of my favorite board gaming memories of when I was like a little child was I think it was like Thanksgiving, and I was like 8 or 9, and we had my mom's family over, and we were all there, and there was a big storm, and we lost power. So like losing power, you all have to gather in the living room with the fireplace, mm-hmm. candles all around, and we all sat and we played. I definitely remember we played Yahtzee. We might have played other games, but we definitely played Yahtzee. And so we're all sitting there in like the half dark, and I just thought like, all of this family gathered around, like there were aunts and uncles still talking and stuff like that, but like all the cousins and like a few of the aunts and uncles, we were all playing Yahtzee together. And I was like, this is like, that was one of my best, like not only like gaming memories, but also like family memories of like Aww. Being a kid growing up and playing that. And
that
it was
chills.
Just, yeah, it's you should get chills and warm feelings all in your heart. Cause it was such a sweet, like fireplace, big carpeted living room. Oh my gosh, our living room was, we had orange carpet. It was, again,
oh,
it was,
how wonderfully horrible.
Yeah,
I
right?
Love
but it's
that.
Super, yeah, so we're all curled up comfy there. And yeah, we're just like rolling dice and playing it. That same set that we played, just, yeah.
A very visceral, visual imagery you've created for all of us.
I want to, Anytime have you I'm... seen my childhood? Oh, wait, no, we're not. We're
that
not.
Sounds beautiful. No. Now, when did the switch happen where you realized that you were a big nerd? Because you used to play outside, and now you've chosen to spend long Saturdays playing Twilight Imperium inside.
So I think that I always liked games because of what they allow us to like be as part of an activity but still communicate. Like when you're planting in the garden, it's not easy to be like bent over, hunched over, like weeding, pulling weeds and like,
no
hey,
way.
Blah, blah, blah. You know, how's that? You know, you're sweaty, you're gross and everything like that. But when you are playing a board game, it's like, oh, we're all here. And we're not all, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, again, if you're like chopping wood, you can't be like, so it was really cool that, you know, you made delicious pizza. Yeah, how was it? What do you like on pizza? You know what I mean? You can't. You're
yeah,
doing
that classic time. Gardening pizza talk. Yeah, no, I get
all
it.
That you're, yeah, I was missing out on it. But no, I think I just realized that games were something where it was like, hey, everybody we're all going to do this, right? And I think it also is like being an only child. And being in like a large space, I was so used to like being alone and being distant from people. Having a game to like, hey, we're all gonna be here for the next like hour, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Social interaction.
Oh my god! Like growing up, so like when we first got our Nintendo, I was like, I really want multiplayer games because I don't want. When my friends come over, I don't want them to like watch me or like me watch them.
Yeah.
Like I want stuff that we can play together.
Do you have two-player Duck Hunt?
Two of the guns.
Yeah.
Two-player Duck Hunt.
But oh, like, you had two guns? We had one gun and one controller.
No, we definitely had one gun. Yeah. But I was just picturing two guns would be the best two-player.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We just had the
one. I guess it wasn't a thing.
Yeah, Super Mario Bros. 3, playing together, trying to beat the game together. I remember when the next systems came out, you know, Sega Genesis and Super Nintendo, my good friend Mike Zoller was like, hey, I'm going to get a Super Nintendo. And I was like, well, for Christmas, I could, You know, I could ask my parents for a Super Nintendo, but then we'd both have Super Nintendos. Whereas if I asked for a Sega Genesis, then maybe we could play Mortal Kombat because Kombat wasn't on the Super Nintendo. And then, so like, I was literally trying to get games so that we could get the most games for all of us to enjoy.
But then you cement your and Mike's?
Yes.
Your and Mike's friendship, you know? Because he relies on you for your Sega Genesis.
Yeah.
And you rely on him for his Super Nintendo. Yeah. It bonds you.
And he can never leave me. And then we'll be friends forever.
That's
it's like
how you
Michael
make friends
Scott.
Forever.
Yeah.
It totally is a thing.
But yeah.
And then tell me about The Dragon and Meeple, where you are a very recent game curator because they just have opened. They're soft opening.
Oh, yeah. Brand spanking new. The vision from Chris Buskirk, one of the owners here, was just to create this gaming space that is just like an amazing, not necessarily, but like it is a bar restaurant, but almost like a country club for like gamers. Like
now, when you said that the first time, I cringed.
You
country
cringed.
Club equals gross to me.
Yeah, exactly. Like who likes a country club? But all that means is that we want to provide a quality experience.
Community.
Than, exactly. A place that you can go to that's not necessarily, you know, like a lot of like mom and pop game shops that are not necessarily like local neighborhood game shops, but like the ones that are just like, oh, here are a bunch of like kids games and whoopee cushions and kazoos, and then also we'll have like
kazoo section.
Yeah. You know, because you've got the kazoos that are alto and then baritone kazoos.
Of course.
Like,
to complement each other, you need harmony.
Oh my gosh, I can't tell you how many unharmonious kazoo performances I've been to that I just walk right out of.
Why did you go in the first place?
Oh, usually a Tinder date or something. I'll be like, okay, hey, my cousin's playing.
You're in the kazoo subsection of Tinder. I don't know how Tinder works.
You don't.
Is it like forums?
Is it like forums? Is Tinder like forums?
I'm going to list myself in the kazoo section.
And I found that I was getting a lot of dates in the kazoo section, and I just like stayed there. I don't even
kazoo
like,
kazoo fan seeking kazoo fan.
Yeah.
But only
I'm
alto?
I'm more of a slide whistle guy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Boom. Boom. I got one at home for dating,
Yes. So,
what are we talking about?
We were talking about why I like games when that started happening. We were talking about Dragon and Meeple.
That's right.
So the idea was to provide this like great environment where people can come and have, adult beverages and, like the food is amazing and just have this experience and play from. We have over like 400 board games to choose from.
Whose collection does that come from? How does a board game bar or cafe get their original collection?
Yeah, and a lot of it is like some of it is from distributors that we reached out to, but a lot of it is just pooled from like all of these friends from all over. So we really have like I kind of want to keep a list of like, you know how there's like museum wings, like, on loan from, Cynthia Massey, what I mean? Like, because, everybody has just chipped in to create this like huge, wonderful collection of games. That is just like when we were cataloging it and it was just like, oh, I can't wait for us to play this, or I can't wait to play this, or like, this reminds me of this element and stuff like that. And some of them are games that you've heard of and are, you're like, oh my gosh, I've been hearing about this for years. And then some of them are just like, I didn't know that they made a game like this, and you're just like, can't wait to see how this one mechanic plays out. So,
like, of course, they've got to have the Lords of Waterdeep.
Mm-hmm. Lords of Waterdeep, like Settlers of Catan.
One that you've never heard of?
We have one. It's called Suburbia.
I love that game.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I had never heard of it.
Oh, man.
And I was like, what a sublime name for a board game.
It really is. It's a sort of tile collection. You're building your own suburbia. Everybody's one of those multiplayer solitaire kind of games.
Okay.
creating your own beautiful wonderland.
Suburbia.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you had told me that pitch on Shark Tank, I don't know if I'd fund that. I don't know.
Well, I haven't. haven't reviewed, you know, I'm not prepared to pitch it, but I do want to talk more about Lords of Waterdeep in a little bit. And through the lens of competition.
Yeah.
Okay.
Played tons of Waterdeep. Bring it on.
Lords of Waterdeep was one that infected my friend's group. It was like one person got it, and then we all played it, and we were like, we love it. And then the other friend got it, and then my roommate got a copy, and it was just like, we all have our copies of Waterdeep.
Oh, that's too many copies. You can only play one at a time.
It's unnecessary. It's unnecessary. But at the same time, it's just like, I don't want to I want to be able to play whenever I want to play, you know?
I get it. Yeah. I totally get that. It's a great game. All right. So we're going to take a short break so you can have a word from our sponsors. And then we're going to dive into the psychology of competition and then dive in a little bit to Lords of Waterdeep.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey, welcome back. I'm talking to my friend James Katica, an avid gamer, about all the games that we love and he loves, as well as competition. Is that what fighting sounds like?
Yeah, that's...
Yours was accurate. I don't know what mine was. Mine was some, like, beating on trash can drums.
Don't let anyone tell you how fighting should sound like. You fight how you want to fight. And yeah, that's a good psychological, because then people are like, what is she doing? Like, is she fighting some way? Is this Krav Maga? Like, you know what I mean?
Is
like,
it?
They don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, they don't know what I know.
Yeah.
I'm just a natural karate kid.
Yeah.
All right. So I want to read to you a quote that I found when I was looking up if there's research been done on the psychology of board games. So here's what I found. Board games usually are an every man for himself scenario, and they separate us into teams. And this automatically turns on our competitive switch in the brain. We start producing adrenaline and cortisol, and we become ready to fight. Thanks to Dr. Alok Trivedi, a psychological performance coach and founder of the Aligned Performance Institute. I don't know who that is, but I found this quote from him, and I thought it was so interesting.
Yeah.
And because we can't psychologically separate what happens to us in real life and what happens to us in a board game. Mm-hmm. So a real win feels like a win in your own life, and a loss feels like a psychological loss.
Yeah.
And I thought that was so interesting that he said that adrenaline and cortisol are released. Those are your fight or flight hormones.
Yeah.
So how do you keep your cool in a game setting?
Gosh, I think that, honestly, like, I do get, like, I feel it, like, inside, but ultimately I feel like when I'm playing a game, it does allow me to do things that I normally wouldn't do. Like, I can be meaner than I might be, or I can be, you know what I mean? I can be the better version of myself, or like the worst version of myself.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where, like, you know, you talk about fight or flight, but it's like, if I'm playing a board game with my parents, I can't, like, fight them.
Right.
I can't wrestle with them. You know, they'll kick my butt. Well, not now. But, like...
they'll be very disappointed in you. Yeah,
stop wrestling and finish your dinner. You know, like, it's one of those things where it allows you to kind of... It sets that level playing field where it's like we're all coming in, you know, obviously our wits, but, like, you know, the rules are set out, you know, to where... victories within our grasp, right?
Right, for the person with the doctorate and the 10-year-old kid,
yeah,
they both have an equal chance because of whatever amounts of luck are involved in that particular game.
And I have to ask you, so the 10-year-old kid, so, like, do you ever, like, when you're playing with, like, little nieces and nephews or anything?
I try and cream them.
Do you?
No, it depends. It depends. my experience, I've been recently trying to make my 7.5-year-old niece, oh, she's almost 8,
yeah,
into a gamer. Yeah, and she's at the point where she can read a little bit very slowly, but it can't be a game that involves a lot of reading of cards.
Sure.
But she is extremely strategic. So we were playing a game that I had brought on our family vacation called Barbarian Battlegrounds.
Yes.
And this is when I picked up at Gen Con. I was just walking around and I saw a demo of it, and it's adorable. It's in a small little box, and it is a dice rolling game where you roll dice and then you allocate them on your little board, and you have a secret little player screen that's hiding where you allocated your dice, and then you all reveal, and it'll show whether you've, if you have high rolls, you can use those to attack people, and you can do defensive stuff, and you can earn resources that you can spend to build up your bear army.
Sorry, bear army?
Oh, bears. Bears.
Yeah.
Teddy bears.
Yeah, yeah.
Adorable teddy bears in armor. The art is very charming.
Yes.
And so my seven-year-old niece, we were like, okay, well, we'll teach Amelie this game, even though, you know, it's, I think it's a little too strategic. We'll go easy on her.
Yeah.
And she was going hard every time. She was always initiating combat and usually winning.
Yes.
She was very smart on the strategy of it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that was a particular game that is one that's accessible because it doesn't involve too much reading. There are cards, but you can kind of, you don't have to play your cards.
Gist,
you can you can just roll the dice and do fine. And so that was really cool. And I did put my appropriately kid gloves on at first, and then I was like, oh no. Oh no, I am not gonna let Amelie beat me. She is seven, and she did beat me pretty badly, but but my sweet father, hey dad, I am a little nicer playing games with him because he is extremely competitive as well.
Oh,
and so if I don't play nicely, it doesn't end well.
Yeah, and that's the other thing too, is that like you're saying, like you can't separate it. Well, I was going to say, like, I love games because I can talk so much trash, and then after the game is over, it's all gone. But I also know that some people who like hold on to it, and it's like, you know, and you know those friends that like a couple of days later, and you'll be like doing something completely unrelated, and they'd be like, yeah, like that game, and you're just
I just pointed to the game that like, I have brought to decorate the table today.
Call to Adventure. Yeah, I'm just so glad that we have that for posterity. You know, that trouncing, and then, you know.
Well, we should talk about what we're talking about. So the other day, James and I, on Game the Game, played a game called Call to Adventure. It's from Brotherwise Games, designed by Chris and Johnny O'Neill. And Chris was nice enough to come and show the game to us, be there in the studio. And this is a great card collection game. It's very role-player-y.
Yeah.
You are creating your adventure as a hero, and you're moving through the three acts of the story. It's based on like a storybook.
It's like
adventure.
A narrative that you get to, you know, take part of.
But it's a little bit of that points salad type of game where each person's a little bit doing their individual thing, and then you eat up that point salad at the end, and you score yourself in different categories, and then see how many overall points everyone has. And I got trounced by you, James. So this is why this is why I wanted to do this episode, was because I think it is partially my competitive nature against myself, because it wasn't about you per se.
Sure.
I'm happy to have you beat me in a game because you are a good game player, but I scored way, way less than you, and I know it's because I did not optimize my gameplay in my individual opportunities.
Yeah.
And so I immediately challenged you to another game at Guildhall, our favorite bar. With, you know, I would say it's an esports bar. Is that what they're calling themselves?
Okay. Yeah.
Because they have Twitch screens playing instead of sports screens, and they have a bunch of board games. It's the best place. And awkward. Hey, the Dragon and Meeple is going to have to work their way up. But I immediately challenged you, and then I did very well. I scored the same as you scored on our first playthrough, and then I was like, I really just made everybody do that so I could, like, win. And I didn't need to win that game. I just needed to play again because it was a game with a steep learning curve. And then I was, like, reflecting all night on feeling bad about how I demanded an immediate rematch. How did you feel about that experience?
It was so funny because like we've played some games and we've done Game the Game a handful of times. You
some
know,
might say.
Yeah.
If you include our 12 games of Betrayal Legacy we've played.
Yes. Oh, I so include that. But like, you know, we've done a handful of games and I don't believe that I've ever like won per se anything. So this one, it was just like, it was interesting. And I could tell that you weren't necessarily like optimizing or like playing to the full Becca potential.
Ouch.
You know?
Okay.
Well, no, you flipped over your final card and you hadn't even, you know what I mean? Like your destiny, which is the third act, which all of your heroic arc is going to, or your villainous arc is going to.
I spaced.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Whiffed it.
Always keep an eye on your destiny, folks.
Yeah.
That's my thought.
Life advice.
So, It was just interesting because we finished and you immediately were like, hey, do you want to, let's go play a game. And you didn't say
any game, whatever you want to play, Call to Adventure.
Yeah. And Jake, you know, Jake was also like, hey, stick around for a little bit. And I was like, okay, yeah.
If anyone is starting with this episode, yeah. Jake was on the first episode of this podcast and he is the director of Game the Game on Geek and Sundry.
Yes, yes. And my longtime friend of mine. And so he was like, hey, let's hang out and play a game. And I was like, okay, cool. So, and I loved it because I could tell we got to Guildhall and you... and we were waiting for Katie,
Jake's wife,
and we were waiting for her, and they have gotten into Istanbul recently, so they were like, hey, you know, let's play, you know, Katie's gonna bring Istanbul in, and you were like, but like we could like just start setting up
to
Call
to fair,
Adventure.
I didn't know Istanbul was in the picture, you know, I was just dead set on Call to Adventure.
I know. And we three are sitting there, like, we're just, like, talking, getting our beers, and you're, like, starting to, like, set out the cards and stuff like that. And that's when, I just laugh because it's, like, for me, again, the game itself is a joy, so, like, I'll play whatever. But like I knew that it meant a lot to you to be like, okay, now I'm ready. You know what I mean?
No. Personal best.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one of those things is just, like, it's one thing to lose something when you're unprepared, and that's why I don't mind like going on Game the Game and like losing. It's just like, oh well, you know what I mean? Like it's our first time playing, or it's like I don't really know what's happening. You
and
know what I mean?
If you name your impromptu character Festivus Spriggins, you really can't lose anything.
Yeah,
yeah.
I've already won.
Yeah, exactly.
For myself, you know, I feel good about that, and so yeah, so you're just there for the experience. And to that, I'm just on cruise control, and I can be as goofy or silly or, you know, as aggressive as I want to be. But ultimately, the points or whatever doesn't matter. But then because I did have a little bit of experience before we played, because we were testing it out the day before, so I kind of knew how, like, some of the basics work. And I was like, well, I know this. But I was still
and
going for it.
I've been a little bit salty about that fact.
Of course, of course. Well, I had assumed that you had had the same, like because you do the how to plays.
One would think. often I do have that advantage.
Yeah, because you do the how to plays, and you're the one who sits with the game the most. So I always assume that you're coming in with at least like a 90%. You know.
Thank you for that assumption. Thank you.
Thank you for your assumptions, James. They really mean a lot.
Because they're positive assumptions.
Of course, yeah. So we played through it again, and it was definitely a lot more. I was like, oh, okay. So, you know, this is how it feels to, like, have a little edge on it. It's totally fun.
You played very well as Festivus Spriggins. Yes.
Oh, man.
The other thing I want to talk about that is related to the psychological release of hormones, something physiological that happens when you – stop with that face.
Okay.
When you play board games is you can release oxytocin, which is kind of like the love hormone, the social connectedness that you're talking about as you were an only child. And so you were looking for excuses to bring people together, especially in a rural area, that is – a physiological response that the body can have. I think that's more of a co-op game kind of feeling.
Sure.
But potentially.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's also a part maybe of why we love games.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I totally agree with that. I was thinking back back when I was in Seattle, just shortly before I moved here, we were in a house. We had a
in
house.
Los Angeles.
Here in Los Angeles, a city of angels. So, back in Seattle, the Emerald City, I was realizing that my friends and I, after work, it would always be like, what bar are we going to? We're going to a bar. We're going to this bar. We're going to that bar. And bars are fantastic, but I was like, I'm drinking a lot. I'm putting on some tummy weight. Like, I'm spending a lot.
How else do you see your friends, though?
Yeah, exactly. And I was just like, I haven't played a game in a long time. And so it just became like even just like social, like party-ish games, like Code Names was like our go-to.
Yeah.
But then from that, we would like pull in other things like Kittens in a Blender and things like that.
And this was when you were in college?
No, this was right before I moved here.
You just said that, and I'm a bad listener. Yep.
But in college too, though. In college too,
I was like, Code Names wasn't out. You're making things up.
You're messing with the timeline,
it's like
James.
Kamala
you're messing
Harris
with the timeline.
She listened to Snoop Dogg. Yeah, right.
Snoop Dogg, which is the athletic rap music.
That's his cousin. Yeah.
I was running down the street, sweating to the beat. In college too, I was very heavily involved in the theater group, and I was also in a fraternity. So there was definitely so there were definitely a lot of parties to go to, but I get a little overwhelmed, like a little bit of anxiety with these like huge parties and just like all this craziness going on.
Because you're such a bad dancer.
Because I'm such a bad dancer that people get hurt and they tell me to stop and they tell me to sit down. It's just a lot of stimulus for me.
Yeah.
And so I would like those, but like the older folks in the theater group, they would always tease me because like I would take like the younger group and like my friends and we would go like, "Oh, we're not, you guys have your kegger. We're going to be over here playing, you know, a board game or a video game together." Like we played a lot of like Mario Party or something like that.
Hell yeah.
But it was just like they were like, "Oh, this is like changing of the guard," because like after they all graduated, it was much more like mellow. There wasn't like so many like ragers per se. And they were like, "Oh, well, you guys like ushered in this kind of like nerdy, kind of like functional, not like getting wasted till 3 a.m. kind of thing." I mean, there were still parties, of course. You can't not do that in college. But I think that it was just like one of those things where it was like, I want these friends and I want to talk to them and you know, conversate with them, obviously have a drink and things like that. And that's what was happening in Seattle. Is we got into like a regular, like, "Hey, we're just going to hang out and play games, you know, for a couple of hours." Some people come by and that's how I met some new people, like brought in other people from the circle. It was just like a really great way to like introduce this like friend circle. And
I feel that same way. So in a party setting, it's so hard to know what to do unless you are the best dancer or you are just like totally wasted and just having the time of your life. Like trying to start a conversation over loud music or break the ice with someone you don't know is so much easier when there's a functional thing that you can have between you that you guys handle and take care of. You know, you're adventuring together. You are battling monsters or whatever it is together,
it
does create a simulation of a scenario that can bond you together.
Yeah.
Whereas at a party, I don't think we need to feel bad that most of us are really forcing the social interaction in a party setting usually, unless it's with friends you already know really, really well.
Yeah.
And then you're just talking and hanging out. But the social buffer of having a board game is really helpful. And for me, I smoked a lot of pot in college.
Really?
Yeah. So if I wanted to hang out with someone, I would say, "Hey, you should come over and smoke a bowl sometime."
Yeah.
And that bowl was the excuse to get together and hang out. Of course, this was at a time where I wasn't Missouri, where weed was way less potent. I can't even smoke anything in California now because it's all medical grade and it's insane. This stuff we were smoking, it was like so dry. You put an orange peel in the baggie to even like see any sort of moisture
in it. I don't know.
That caused mold, though. It was a whole other situation. But then we started smoking a lot of weed and playing Scrabble.
Scrabble
was my game. I mean, that's a game that I could see myself going pro with, you know?
You could see that? I feel
there
like you should.
There was a time.
Oh, okay. There was a time.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting that you say that because, like, first off, you just, like, when is there going to be, like, a Diet Coke of weed? Like, when is there, like this is, because everything's trying to get stronger.
Yeah, where's the diet weed?
Yeah,
the baby weed.
Yeah, yeah. Where's going to be, like, the,
weed
"Hey, man,
junior.
This is, like, this is, like, a light, this is a pale ale of weed," you know? That's what one. But the other thing is,
I guess that's the CBD oils, but those are just don't work at all.
What?
Fake.
Oh no, they're not.
They're not.
It could. I can definitely tell you because I only started experimenting with weed really when it became legal in Seattle, which was like
three years ago.
You're such a good kid.
I was such a good kid. It was so weird.
It's the only child thing. You didn't have siblings that competing against to break the rules, you know?
No breaking the rules. I was such like a Cub Scout. I remember one time in high school, we were all sitting in our buddy's barn, and I had never had any, you know, interaction with it, but they were passing the joint around, and it like got to me.
And this was your first time?
I think so. Yeah. Because I was just like, oh, cool. You know, we're all hanging out. We had all done something earlier. We were hanging out. And then we went to this guy's barn. They're all smoking. And it got to me. And my buddy Ben just like reaches over and he's like, oh, he doesn't do that. And like, does it, like I didn't
Ben,
even.
Ben, he was protecting you. What a sweet friend.
I mean, like, if there was no pressure. It wasn't like, hey, James, you're going to hit this. It was literally just like, you know, just like handing it off. And he was like, oh, he doesn't do that. And I was just like, first off. I've never been offered, but you know that's
yeah,
fair.
Yeah, let me say if I do. Wait, but you were offended by him jumping in?
No,
he just wanted to protect you.
Oh, absolutely.
And
no.
So you didn't have the peer pressure.
I didn't have the peer pressure, but it was also just something that I was raised staunchly like dare say no to drugs. Like we had those like scary like if you smoke the reefer, you're going to end up dead in a gutter. And I was just like, "Yes, you will. Guys, don't do that, you know?
I was dying to smoke some weed.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
Show your parents who's boss.
Dare made me more interested.
Because
we did like an interpretive dance to the Because I Got High song as part of like a Dare program. I was like, this is hilarious. What a funny song. I want to smoke weed.
Okay, that sounds like a fault in the DARE program.
But
yeah, ours was much more doom and gloom and Old Testament style. Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
I completely...
Oh, can I also smoked weed for the first time leaning up against the side of a barn in rural Germany.
Something about barns. Barns are just like...
Barns feel right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like we're in a safe space. Animals live here. Let's get high, you know?
to bring it back to board games.
To bring it back to board games. Real quick, CBD, when I was first starting it, totally body high. I felt like I could still play Overwatch.
But there must have been a small amount of THC to activate the CBD.
Oh!
I've learned things because I did research for my father-in-law before I bought him CBD pills because
he has
joint pain.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
That's fair. To bring it back to board games, when you were saying Scrabble, this is an interesting about competition, right?
Mm-hmm.
So with Scrabble, when I was a young kid playing against I would rope my parents in. Maybe we would be out camping somewhere and we would like set it up on a picnic table or something like that. I read a lot as a kid and I would try and do as many big words as possible, you know, try and get the 7 letters and try and do all that.
Of course, you get a 50-point bonus if you do a 7-letter word.
Exactly. I would do large, you know, 5-6-letter words. And I got so frustrated because my father would beat me with like little 2-letter words, 3-letter words.
Oh, yeah, that's how the game is played.
Exactly.
It's all about knowing your 2-letter words. There's a list in the back of your rules pamphlet. Yeah.
Yes. And to that point is like, I always thought of Scrabble as like, we're trying to encourage large vocabularies and do that. Whereas if you just gamify it down to the, no, it's try to get most points.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like that's missing an opportunity.
Qi, which is something about spirituality.
Qi, it's like, yeah, or like
oh,
chi.
Yeah, chi.
Yeah,
chi.
It's another, yeah.
Oh, it's
yeah.
Chi.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
just was like, no, that's the Qi 2-letter word in Scrabble. Key.
I just do this, it give me points.
Basically,
yeah.
Scrabble bot, super stone Scrabble bot.
Yeah.
But that is
like
what
Rain
it's about.
Man with a pot with a bowl of ice. Yeah.
I don't know. I wonder whoever created it, I should do this research, whether that was their intention or whether it just the game took on a life of its own and became this thing that it was about getting those triple letter word scores because mm-hmm. that's what the game is really about.
I mean, ultimately, the score is the score and somebody wins and somebody loses, right? So it doesn't matter how good your vocabulary is if you got beat by, I just remember seeing some of those 2-letter words and I was like, And my thing is, if you play a word that you never use or have even seen, you just like, you know what I mean? Like, you don't even, you know what I mean? Like, there was something that was like a retainer. It was like some like, it was like A and like E or something like that. And it was like something, or it was like all these like short 2-letter words. Because I looked up this list
A-E.
And I was like,
yeah. Counts.
And I was just like, that's gross. That's gross.
All right. Well, there's an official Scrabble dictionary, and if you choose to take your turn to challenge, then that's your prerogative. But
yeah.
It could penalize you.
Yeah.
Or it could penalize me. Somebody's losing a turn.
Yeah.
All right.
So.
Well, you know, I promised we'd talk about Lords of Waterdeep. So yeah. Do you want to get into it? And we can talk about the competitiveness it brings out in us. But I also just want to talk about what a great game it is.
Sure.
Even
sure,
though
sure.
I have never played with humans, I've only played with AI a lot. Because they have a great app. But we should describe it for people who have never played.
Sure.
So, released in 2012 by Wizards of the Coast, Waterdeep is a location setting in Dungeons & Dragons, which you know more about as being an avid D&D player. Yeah. It's in the Forgotten Realms, I hear some say. So basically, us as players, we're powerful lords vying for control of this great city.
Mm-hmm.
We are masked secret rulers of the city, so we have a secret alliance, sort of. Yes. And this is worker placement, which is the kind of game where you have a certain number of meeples, and each round you place your meeples somewhere, and they gain you some sort of benefit. And then at the end of the round, everyone collects their meeples, and you do it again. It's also set collection, because you're collecting colorful cubes to match the quest cards. And once you have the right designation of colorful cubes, you need 3 purple and 2 orange and 1 black, then you could do, that's probably a wizard type of quest, I would think. You know, that combination of colors.
Yes.
I am real addicted to the app. Okay. So you start with 3 workers. You can gain more, and you place them in locations. And then you can also construct buildings. Then that's the more interactive element, because if other people use your building, you get a benefit, which is cool. You can play intrigue cards. That's the other way to kind of say F you to the fellow players. But mostly, you're doing your own thing.
Yes.
And then at the end of 8 rounds, whoever has the most points, including the points that are in tandem with their secret identity, is the winner.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you love this game?
I think that I love this game just because it does such a good job of balancing the different activities that you can do. Like, there are multiple ways to win. And I just like that I have my lord and I have my goals that I'm going for, and then there are different quests that I can go for, and there are so many ways about it. I just find that even at the end of it, like, even if I haven't gotten all my Lord points, like, I couldn't be happier. It's just like, because again, I played to my best. You know what I mean? Like, I did my best.
Yeah.
And I got so many of these or something like that. Or I got so many buildings or something like that. Or just something just like it's interesting to interact with. Or, and like, the quest cards are like, you know, destroy the Thieves Guild, or it's like, you know, assist the Grey Hands.
Wait,
or
how do you destroy the Thieves Guild? Does that affect, as a location on the board, you destroy it?
No. It's one of the quest cards that you, the quest cards that you're doing, and then you do your worker placement to get the right cubes to accomplish that, and then you've done that. So there's like, little...
as a quest, got it.
Yeah, yeah. So the quests will say things like that, or, fight the mad wizard.
So the role-playing that you could do is a big part of it for you.
Yeah, I guess I love story in games, too. It's just kind of a fun thing to, like, think of these. Like, even back, you know, like, playing Clue, it's just like, we're all friends and someone's been murdered, you know? Like, but, you know, you can break it down into binary things, but it's just like with this Waterdeep, it's like we are all lords. We are all, you know, vying. And me and my group of friends, we play, like, kind of like the same characters.
Right.
So we have,
and
like,
can I just say about Clue that Colonel Mustard definitely, like, he was in war. He definitely killed people, so...
Yeah.
My money's always on him. But what happens when you and your friends play Lords?
See, that's judging a book by its cover. Mm. You know? He left that life behind. He's, you know.
Well.
Or not.
He's
or
capable not. Of it, is all I'm saying.
Our lines are open, Colonel Mustard, if you want to give us a call and defend yourself and let us know. Yes.
Oh, okay. James, this is Colonel Mustard calling in.
I didn't even have to answer, Colonel. Yes.
That was me, James, your assistant,
Denise.
Oh, my
gosh.
Yeah, I switched the line on. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'll ask next time.
It's okay.
We have Colonel Mustard on the line.
Thank you, Stacy.
My name's Denise. Goodbye.
Thank you, Denise.
James.
Yes.
I don't need you to defend me. I can handle my own. I was in the war.
Are you killing someone right now, Colonel Mustard?
I don't know. Does drowning count as killing?
What the hell?
Oh, I forgot. Oh, she's here, my dog. Anyway, that was a deep tangent.
Yes. You get these lords, and even the lords that you get that you're supposed to be portraying, like they have a beautiful picture, and you can kind of like dig into that, and you're like doing these different quests that are, they could be piety, or they can be commerce, or they can be arcana, and it's just like, ooh, am I more magical and pious, or am I, you know what I mean? Like, you can take on these traits.
And when your secret identity will have one of those specific traits, or two of them, that you get a bonus for finishing quests in that realm, in the commerce, or the piety, or the arcana.
Yeah, it's like money on your money.
Yeah. Well, do you always, strategy-wise, do you always take whatever's on your secret agenda card and go for all of those, or... What are your main strategies you like to stick to?
I mean, you have to be fluid about it. Like, I can go for what's on my Lord card for sure, but if the quests aren't coming up, then obviously I can't do that. You know what I mean? So I have to go for the quests that are available. You know, what's going to get me the most points? What's going to set me up for success later on? Because there are certain quests that are plot quests. So plot quests stay active for the rest of the game. So it'll be something like every time you draw a white priest cube, draw a second one.
Yeah, you got to get those early on, though, to get those benefits.
Exactly. So like kind of strategizing like that. I will definitely try for what's on my Lord, but if the person who goes right before me has the same goals and like they're taking all of the Arcana quests or something like that, then I've got to pivot and do something else to either, you know, try and screw them over, or, you know, I will take the first turn next round, something like that. So I just like the joy of it. It was one of the first times where I was like, we can all be kind of playing our own game together, and then at the end, it all comes together. And so it blew my mind when I played it, and I was just like, this is fantastic, and I wanted to play it. And that's why it infected our friend group. We all bought it. We all play. We all come back to it. It's just enjoyable, because I still feel accomplished even when I get shredded, and I've lost. So many games. I've lost so many games of Lotter Deep.
You played so many games. Yeah. Percentage-wise. Now, that's what I have. I took, jokingly said the derogative term, a solitaire, a multiplayer solitaire style of game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is actually a type of game I really enjoy, despite...
Solitaire's great.
but you're okay with that kind of game. You don't need that take that sort of mechanic to be super present for you to enjoy a game.
I think that, oh gosh, it is one of those things where if I have to screw somebody over.
I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry. Sorry, I have to do
God,
this. Sorry.
I'll screw you over. Huh?
Yeah, Jake is fantastic about making it seem like he's doing you a favor. Like oh no, I gotta do this, and then now you can do this other thing.
And you can do it to me. Yeah, we're both happy.
So good at that.
We gotta get him next time. Next time we play Twilight Imperium, we're gonna crush him.
Oh my god! And Twilight Imperium is one of those things too, where it's like I'm invested in my society and what I'm trying to build, and maybe I attack these people just because I don't like them or something like that, or you know. But like, you know, the points are gonna come, the points are gonna go, but it's just like for this story, for this group of friends, like what, you know, what brings you joy. But yeah,
find the Marie Kondo of it.
Find the Marie Kondo.
Be the Marie Kondo of gaming.
God, Marie Kondos are so expensive nowadays. Am I right? Just like can't even find one for rent around.
No. What? Giving away your stuff is free.
I know.
Getting rid of everything you own is free.
I was making a real estate joke. Yeah. That's true. I gave away a lot. That's one thing. When I moved down, I gave away all my board games when I moved down here.
Okay, that's
had to do it.
That's a difficult thing. Why?
Yeah, I had only so much room in my car, and I was like, I need these things, the games. I knew there were people who would enjoy them, and it would bring them joy. And I was like, I will probably, you know, reaccumulate games.
But you kept a few, right?
I think I kept like a deck of. Hanabi.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
wow.
That brings me, sorry, there was one other game that was throughout my childhood and throughout my life, Cribbage.
Oh, you're a Cribbage player, eh?
Your face.
I know nothing about cribbage.
It's completely numbers. It's just, so we, my parents would play it when we were camping, play it. And then our math teacher in like third or fourth grade was like, hey, we're going to learn math through playing this game, which I was like, awesome. So it was all, it's all about, you know, trying to organize the best hand of cards to get, like, the thing is like 15. 15 gets you 2 points. So you're like, when you're adding up your cards, you might do, you know, a 6 and a 9 is 15, but you might have another 9. So you're like, 9 and 6 is another 15. So 15, 2, 15, 4. And then your pair of 9s, that's worth another 2. So you add this all up quickly. So it's like, you know, quick mental math and also trying to, like, organize your hand and
okay,
stuff like that.
Okay, that got you hooked. Now, yeah. we're pretty much out of time, so I just want to bring it back to ways to deal with competition. Perhaps maybe a little bit of advice for either if you are a person that gets too competitive and too heated in a game with just friends, or if you have that person in your game group that you need to deal with in some way because they're taking it too far. So what would be your advice for those situations, James?
Gosh, there are so many different ways. Like I've dealt with overcompetitive people a couple of different ways, and that is like variety of games, like maybe not getting the games that focus so much on, you know, like a zero-sum game. You know, some things that are more co-op, things like that. So me as a game provider, I would look at something that like, let's like ease the tension to play something a little bit more free-flowing.
Or maybe a little Seven Wonders. You know? Something where there's a war element, but it's minor. Yeah.
Exactly. It doesn't encourage the conflict. Things like that. Other than that, also, I think there's a lot to be just like recognizing within yourself. That it's okay. And like,
but what do you say if that person doesn't seem to be recognizing it on their own?
I mean, then I...
Here, do it as if I am that person. Go ahead.
I think that you're a great game player. I think that you have a passion for this game. I just want you to recognize that all of us are here to have fun and game together. And we're all pursuing joy here. So maybe be aware of the joy of others and let them have the same fun that you are having.
When you say it like that, I can't be mad.
And realize that after this game, we're going to put it back in the box and put it away.
That's a beautiful note to close on. Let's always remember that games are there to spark joy.
Yes.
All right. Well, James, tell them where they can find you, even though you don't like to social media.
You can find me on Instagram.
You don't
just
Instagram.
JustJames24. you can find me there. You can find me JustJames24 on Instagram. You can
just
find
with no T.
No T. Just. That's why I say it like that. I have good enunciation when it is needed. But this is JustJames24 on Instagram. You can find me there. You won't see much, but you can find me there. I'll do more.
Okay. Well, you keep saying that.
I do. Because I will. Starting from zero, more is everywhere but up.
Sure. Okay.
So, and then also you can find me at the Dragon and Meeple, which is right by, right across the street from Exposition Park by USC there, curating games for all the fine folks.
And do you guys have an official date set for your grand opening?
Oh, gosh. We actually are...
Coming month or so. So maybe April-ish
it
of
is 2019? It is right now TBD because we are waiting on one final license thing. But yeah, that is something that we will definitely, we'll let you know.
When there will be booze. Okay,
yes.
We'll announce it when you know. Cool. Well, thanks so much to everybody at home. Please rate, review, like, share, subscribe, tell your friends if they like games that they should be listening to this podcast so they can just hang out with us, talk games. Yeah. All right. Thanks so much. We'll see you guys next time on Victory Points.